Welcome to this episode of the Payments Show podcast. My name is Satwant Phul, and today I will be speaking to Jeremy Larson, who is the UK General Manager and Director of Strategic Partnerships at CurrencyFair. CurrencyFair provides currency exchange services to businesses and consumers. I spoke with Jeremy to ask how the company's services are helping businesses who transact and move money internationally. Enjoy the episode. Hello, Jeremy. Welcome to the Payments Show podcast.
Hello, Satwant, and thank you very much for reaching out to me. I'm really interested in having the call.
Excellent. Likewise, I really appreciate you coming on. So, Jeremy, I normally like to jump straight into it. After giving you a quick introduction, I'm going to hand over to you. Jeremy is the UK General Manager and Director of Strategic Partnerships at CurrencyFair. CurrencyFair allows businesses and individuals to send money with a better exchange rate and avoid excessive bank fees. So, Jeremy, I'd love to hand over to you and ask you if you could please introduce yourself. Tell us a bit about your background and tell us how CurrencyFair can help businesses with payments.
Well, before I go into my background, I'll just elaborate a little bit more on CurrencyFair. So it's a very, very interesting business. It is genuinely a peer-to-peer currency exchange platform. So it was the first of its type in the world, actually. It started off in Perth, Australia, with the founding team headed up by Brett Myers. It's a very interesting story in terms of how it ended up in Dublin. I think Brett met his future partner while she was in Australia, and she was from Ireland. They compared corporation tax rates, Ireland and Australia. And at the time, I think it was 42% in Australia and only 8.5% in Ireland. And so it was that perfect intersect between love and money, which resulted in the move of CurrencyFair over to Dublin. But no, going back to CurrencyFair itself. So it is genuinely a peer-to-peer currency exchange platform, and it predated the likes of TransferWise by 2.5 years and Revolut by more than 4 years. What that innovation was that it enabled, rather than to use SWIFT networks or the banks with their excessive fees, it enabled one customer from one country who was looking to exchange currency for another corridor to match with another person from that other country on the platform that CurrencyFair developed using correspondent banks. And that innovation was able to reduce currency exchange fees by more than 4% in the market. So it truly was revolutionary. And compared to all of the other alleged peer-to-peer platforms today, it has a higher share of peer-to-peer volume than the likes of TransferWise, Revolut, etc. So just to share that about CurrencyFair first. My background, so I suppose in a nutshell, I'd call myself an entrepreneur. So I was part of the founding team of John Lewis Financial Services, head of strategy and product at Sun Life. I led the rebrand there from a one product funeral insurance company to a multi-life and protection and general insurance provider. Then I was the founder of Telegraph Financial Services, which was the first media company in the UK to have an FCA appointed representative license. But prior to that, I'd worked in strategy. I'd worked in group strategy for Barclays, group innovation for Royal Bank of Scotland, and I've worked also in management consultancy as well. I originally started off as an accountant, but I felt that was a little bit too narrow for my interest. So did my MBA at London Business School and then got into strategy consulting. Then the rest is history in product development and innovation, really.
That's quite a varied background you have there and quite a different set of companies and I suppose markets that you've worked in.
Well, I think not least one of those benefits is in my current role, where a very large part of it is thinking of strategic partnerships, both with major customer franchises and customer brands, as well as high growth startups that are looking to offer their services to new cohorts. I've got that experience of working on both sides. So I've got the experience of working with big banks and understanding how big corporates work and what their kind of sales cycle is. And also I've worked a huge amount with startups and innovators in the fintech and insurtech space. And I'm lucky because I'm a mentor on 3 fintech accelerators as well. So I, from that, see firsthand a lot of the developments in fintech, both in terms of new consumers, new use cases, and potentially new geo markets as well.
Sure. Thank you. I want to move on to currency fairs services. Let's start at a high level first. You mentioned the UK and Australia were key markets in the early days. What markets do you operate in, and where can businesses use your services right now, and what's coming?
Historically, as you rightly said, originally Australia, UK, and obviously given the base in Dublin, the expansion across Europe was a significant advantage based in Dublin as well. So the platform is accessible right across continental Europe, UK, Australasia, and of course the big new territory for currency fair over the last 18 months has been Asia, where you've seen a number of different players in the fintech and currency exchange space looking to land and expand as well. Currency fair can be used to send payments to more than 70 countries globally, but we're based very much in those core markets of UK, England, continental Europe, and over the last 12 months, we've launched in Hong Kong and Singapore as well.
In addition to your announcement for Singapore and Hong Kong, you're also adding more currencies. I saw on your blog that you're accepting Indian rupees, the Thai baht. Is there a certain trend happening where you're bringing on currencies in a certain order? And what are the differences between markets?
Yes, so you've anticipated in part the answer to that. So a real sort of competitive strategy between the different currency exchange players as they look to expand is what is their geo coverage and current currency corridors that they offer. Currency Fair have identified that there are some very high traded volume corridors, not least between Singapore, between Thailand and Hong Kong dollar. We'll be looking to expand into Chinese renminbi soon and other key markets across the Asian space, Indonesian rupiah, Philippine peso, Malaysian ringgit, and Vietnamese and South Korean currencies in time as well. That just adds a tremendous amount of value to all of those trading nations intra South Asia, and also those countries outside of South Asia who are looking to South Asia on the supply side. So for global supply chain management, the more currencies that a company such as Currency Fair is able to offer adds a lot of value to those non-Asian companies that are looking to use Asia in their supply chain operation as well. It's very much something that benefits both companies and countries and consumers within Asia, but also outside of Asia as well.
That's a good segue into next set of questions, which is the reasons your customers use Currency Fair. Supply chains you just kind of touched on, but why are they using Currency Fair, not their traditional banks? If we look at what's happening with banks around the world, we've got high speed, fast transfers, SEPA in Europe. We've got in Australia things like the NPP coming along, the new payments platform, which will allow very fast transfer, not just with bank account details, but transferring through email addresses and mobile phone numbers as well. So somebody listening to this might say, well, okay, you offer a good service, but why can't I just stick with my bank? Why are businesses using your services? Is it cash flow? Is it transferring sales revenue? You mentioned suppliers. What's the whole story around what you're seeing?
So there's really two answers to that, which are almost how did Currency Fair come about in the first place? And what was that original problem that Currency Fair was set up to solve? Then the second question is kind of what are the various use cases that Currency Fair can help businesses and its individuals to save a hell of a lot of money on? So going back and sort of answering that first question, the whole genesis of Currency Fair was that by developing literally a peer-to-peer currency exchange platform with correspondent banks on either side, was to be able to use that currency exchange platform to circumvent the likes of SWIFT and bank-to-bank transfers that were charging in the region of 4, 5, 6% for those currency transfers. So when Currency Fair developed its peer-to-peer platform, it was obviously able to cut all of that expense out because it wasn't using those particular mechanisms for currency exchange. It was using its own currency exchange platform. So at a stroke, it became the very cheapest way to be able to offer money transfer and currency exchange services across the markets that it serves. So, and that still is principally the reason why people use the likes of CurrencyFair, TransferWise, Revolut, et cetera, those who are in that peer-to-peer currency exchange platform space, because yep. they are so significantly cheaper than incumbent banks. And you've only got to see what the market share for currency exchange is in a country like the UK, which is probably the most aggressive and most developed for challenger propositions to banks in currency exchange. So only 10 years ago, the major banks' market share of currency exchange was around about 95%. Now, in 2019, it's around about 70% and still falling rapidly. So that just goes to show the extent to which the challengers with their new propositions, which offer a lot better value at a lot cheaper cost, are eating into the market share of the banks, because consumers and businesses see the value in an incredibly safe service, incredibly quick, but also, of course, it's a hell of a lot cheaper than the bank. So that's kind of the first reason. I think the second reason is about the use cases, as I said. Most of the peer-to-peer platforms originated as a customer proposition, a B2C proposition. So those people that typically use banks for international money transfers saw that they could do effectively exactly the same thing via CurrencyFair or like a TransferWise at much reduced cost. And obviously for consumers, there's a wide variety of use cases, which can include if you're looking to buy a second home abroad, if you're relocating abroad and you're looking to pay your rent in a new currency, if you're looking to get educated abroad or send your children to an overseas university, or if there are overseas investments that you're looking to either to repatriate into your country or looking to make investments in another country. So that's a handful of consumer use cases for which peer-to-peer currency exchange platforms have provided a tremendous amount of value over the incumbent banks and money brokers. What's interesting is really the development of the SME and commercial currency exchange space as well. That's really been a relatively recent phenomenon. Really only after the last 3 to 4 years have you seen a lot of the new challenges and new entrants really focus specifically on providing much better value to businesses, starting with SMEs, but moving up the food chain to more enterprise style companies as well. Businesses too have a number of use cases where they require cheap, fast, efficient international payments as well. When you think about what some of those familiar use cases are, well, one is cross-border payments and multi-currency trading and international payroll, to name but three of those most common use cases. One can see that as a very common phenomenon, as an example, in the rise of the massive online marketplaces such as Amazon.com and Price Minister and Rakuten, where, I mean, just to use Amazon.com as an example. So Amazon.com has more than 4 million online sellers on its platform, and nearly 50% of those, as at October 2019, 46% of all online sellers that used Amazon.com or that supplied to Amazon.com and its customers came from Southeast Asia. Of that, 33%, a third of all suppliers to Amazon.com came from China. So just to use as an example, that shows you a tremendous supply chain flow between Southeast Asia and the United States. A really good example of a pioneer in currency exchange for that particular use case was World First. Listeners to the podcast might be very familiar with what happened in February of this year when Ant Financial, who are the parent company behind Alipay and are owned by Alibaba, paid $700 million to acquire World First. World First, based in the UK, one of the original international money transfer providers, but they weren't based on a peer-to-peer model. They've been going for 15 years, actually. So they predated the fintech arena. But where they had a brilliant innovation and identified a huge market opportunity was in that phenomenon of online sellers from Southeast Asia that were selling to Western massive online marketplaces such as Amazon.com. WorldFirst was the first company to develop what they call the global seller's account, an online seller's account, where for individual suppliers, companies in China and Southeast Asia, those companies could receive individual IBANs for different currencies. IBANs being a bank account, if you like, that would receive currency in their domestic currency. And by doing that, WorldFirst were able to cut fees for those companies by a huge amount, 2-4%. And so those companies who had traded with the likes of Amazon.com had to use their banks to transfer American dollars into their own domestic currency at very high percentages. And at a stroke, WorldFirst developed that proposition whereby the currency exchange, the money transfer, was integrated into their own proposition. So that was a brilliant innovation. And Ant Financial saw that they had the largest market share in that online seller space. There are now around about 10 companies globally that offer that proposition, including Currency Fair as well. So Currency Fair obviously saw that as a massive market opportunity. We've integrated with one major marketplace in China itself, and we're looking to expand internationally as well. So there are a whole range of use cases for businesses: international payments, supply chain, cross-border trading, international payroll, where those companies can benefit from a player such as Currency Fair or a TransferWise as well.
Expanding nicely on from those international bank account type setups, wondered if you can share specifically what does open banking mean? It's a term that's thrown around in lots of different contexts. It could be anything from just having a fintech being able to hook into a main bank to a lot more deeper integration. So what does it mean and how does that help businesses?
Open banking is, to give listeners some context, is a sort of regulatory phenomenon that has been very much led by the EU and by the UK's own FCA, Financial Conduct Authority. The reasoning behind open banking was to provide significantly increased competition for businesses and ultimately consumers outside of the major incumbent banks that had a dominant market share. So in short, what open banking has led to is the creation of open data standards for customer and client information held by banks, and for that information to be accessible by any third-party provider, any TPP that wants to access that consumer or client financial data held by incumbent banks, for those companies to be able to provide better, cheaper, more relevant services to those clients and to those banks. So that's really the context and the reasoning behind open banking in the first place. The UK was the first country in the world, the first financial environment, which implemented in January 2018. And that's been now spread across the whole of the UK environment. And across 2020, it's going to be enacted all over Europe. It's also been put into law in Australia and New Zealand. And you'll see a number of countries such as Singapore in early 2020 follow that same open banking route of promoting both innovation and competition across consumers and businesses, where it had previously been, if you like, stitched up by the big banks. So what does that mean for Currency Fair? That's what the sort of consumer and the business benefit is of open banking. But the benefit or the so what for Currency Fair is really a function of making that data open to third party providers, but also in creating consistent data bridges using APIs, application programming interfaces, so that, for example, a Currency Fair can link its currency exchange APIs, its whole customer journey. It can open up
and be integrated into another financial services company, or indeed any other industry that sees a value in the use case of currency exchange for its customers and for its clients. So that's really a massive sort of opening up, a massive channel for the likes of Currency Fair and other fintechs and other currency exchange providers that are looking to offer their APIs, offer effectively their currency exchange customer journey to a whole new range of potential customers and clients via another customer or business or B2B business. So that's really the benefit of open banking for the likes of Currency Fair. To that end, I have had the prime responsibility in Currency Fair to identify what are those most valuable channels, partnerships, businesses that have significant customer franchises or business franchises that would need the currency exchange. I've been speaking to a whole range of incumbents who don't have currency exchange, like building societies, but also particularly to challenger banks, you know, fintech banks such as Fidor Bank in Germany, which didn't offer currency exchange itself to its customers, but via our partnership with Currency Fair, it's able to offer currency exchange to its customers as well. I spoke to a number of different B2C and B2B customer businesses that are looking to incorporate currency exchange within their overall offering and adding value to their customers as well.
As a customer, if I was going to that bank in Germany and I was using the currency exchange service, it wouldn't appear to me that it's Currency Fair, right? It would be kind of invisible. Is that correct?
Well, there's a couple of executions of that. And this is the beauty about unbundling a customer journey, such as Currency Fair's, to another customer business. So it could be a simple linkage to Currency Fair. So you could have a bit like an affiliate proposition. It's a banner, and then you just link through to Currency Fair. Or it could be a seamless integration within the front end of Fidor Bank and offer that to its customers. So there's many different ways of skinning the cat, and it's really what does that end consumer or end client business want to do in terms of how does it want to integrate the currency exchange proposition into its front end. Some want a completely seamless proposition, others might want a one stage removed proposition where it's more of a currency fair tile or banner to its customers. But that's the beauty of open banking. By having consistent data standards, by being able to unbundle the customer journey so that every single element of the customer journey is kind of open API, you give them the choice to that business of how it then wants to sort of integrate that and create the look and feel for its customers.
I'd love to move on to looking at the cross-border payments area at a bit higher level. We've talked about your peer-to-peer system. We're used to the standard bank transfer system. There are a lot of people now trying to pile into this space. So we've got cryptocurrencies, obviously, and I would personally expand that to mean private currencies, because there are other private currencies other than just crypto. We've got central banks looking at central bank digital currencies in future. We've got Visa and MasterCard that are working on their own systems that I've read this year. I'd love to get your thoughts on what you're seeing in the space at a macro level and how that potentially hooks in with your future services at Currency Fair.
So there's a couple of strands there, and it's a fantastic question because it's really about future gazing, the development of fintech and currency exchange in particular, and seeing what's out there to give some sort of crystal ball on the future. There's a couple of things that you've mentioned which I'd like to pick up on, and I'd like to throw in a few additional ones as well. So let's start with your first thread, which is around crypto. What is really interesting is that there are certain, I suppose, what you'd call ecosystems where some major businesses have been able to create a kind of virtually frictionless ecosystem for a number of different countries and currency corridors using their own blockchain-based, token-based system. I think principal among those, our listeners would have heard of Ripple. Listeners probably would have heard of Rapyd, R-A-P-Y-D. I think they've got a new name. BitPayser is a very interesting model as well, where I think they're based in Senegal, but what they are is using blockchain and using their own token system, providing pretty much frictionless currency exchange across a range of different African currencies as well. So they've created a sort of crypto blockchain ecosystem for Africa. And I think all three of those examples that I've used have got a couple of great advantages. A, they've got scale and kind of trust in their systems, whereby major businesses and indeed banks have entered into partnerships with a number of those currencies and blockchain platforms. I know a number of major American investment and commercial banks have allied to Ripple. Rapid are also looking to create some major and some institutional partnerships. And BitPays have also created some significant international partnerships as well. So they have trust and scale in their respective ecosystems. For a business such as Currency Fair, is it the likes of a Ripple or potentially BitPays could be partners of Currency Fair, whereby we leverage their rails, leverage their network to be able to expand the number of currency corridors and countries that we serve at exceptionally low cost prices. So rather than an individual or a business try to create a relationship directly with a BitPays or a Ripple, Currency Fair, which is a very established both B2C and B2B currency exchange platform, you'd use Currency Fair as that one-stop shop for all of your currency exchange needs. So there wouldn't be any additional pricing disadvantage in using Currency Fair over a Ripple or a BitPays itself. This sort of goes back to the earlier theme of open banking and unbundling the current value chain and customer journey of all fintechs that want to get involved in open banking, so that it makes it easier to create these very customer-centric partnerships through having open data standards, open APIs. So it makes it very much easier for the likes of a Currency Fair to create high-value relationships for its customers, like with the Ripple, for example. I don't want to reveal too many confidentialities, but we are having a number of conversations of that very nature as we're speaking to expand our global offering.
I'm sure you are. We'll have to get you back on next year to expand on that. Okay. The next topic I'd like to touch on is around the political environment. If you look around the world, especially in 2019, I mean, there's just so much going on, civil unrest in many countries around the world. In the Western world, we've got the US election preparations coming up. We've had Brexit. We've got trade wars. Also, don't want to speak about any of those specifically. I would love to get some insights, if you can share them, around if it's had an impact on the way businesses are moving money around, you know, revenue, et cetera, and if you can share any trends or any kind of mitigation strategies that businesses are using, perhaps.
Well, we'll come to America at the end, because that could be a very long discussion. But I think its implication upon global currency exchange and payments is, in the immediate term, a bit more limited as well. I think what's more relevant, just to speak to what you're talking about, political disruption and events that are happening across the globe, is really what is the impact in terms of frictionless trade? I think that's one of the elements. And I suppose in terms of huge topicality, Brexit, of course, is a key macro event between the UK and the EU and the UK and its relationship to the rest of the world in terms of its trading relationships. With Brexit, there's a couple of things, right? So first of all, the volatility of GBP is going to be, and has been over the past 2.5 years, much more significant than any other previous stage, pretty much in the currency's history. What you're going to see in the run-up to a trade agreement, or even not a trade agreement 12 months from now, is lots of volatility. It's deeply uncertain to what sort of level the UK is going to achieve a trade deal with EU. Whilst there is that uncertainty, you'll see great fluctuations in GBP. And that's the first obvious and immediate implication. The second implication is the requirement of businesses and consumers to think a little bit more widely outside of the Euro corridor as well. As a sort of byproduct of the Brexit condition, businesses will be looking at their supply chains outside of Europe as well. So the net-net of those two factors that I've just mentioned is A, currency exchange firms, irrespective of your political views, actually benefit quite greatly, because obviously with increased volatility, there is an increased need for managing your currency exchange flows and managing the risk against those. So generically across the market, you'll see currency exchange firms benefiting from higher trading volumes because of higher volatility. That's the first thing. I think the second thing is, as there are wider trading flows and decisions made by businesses to look at their supply chains outside of Europe as well, what you will see is corridors from GBP to other currencies, whether it's States or Asia, increase as well relative to GBP euro as well. So again, that's another very obvious consequence of Brexit. So nobody's got a crystal ball on this, but I suppose one inevitability is there'll be a greater need for currency exchange. So yeah, that's going to benefit everybody in that particular industry. So that's the Brexit issue. I think more globally, I think there's some interesting things in terms of harmonization. Open banking is a fascinating area where it kind of serves every business, every regulator, and every consumer across the globe, that there is this joined up patchwork of open API standards so that there is increased competition, increased transparency across the globe for financial services using open API bridges and having consistent open financial services data. So it's going to be very interesting to see, in a time of relative political flux, if there still can be a sort of consistent, coherent, if you like, global strategy between different country financial regulators to kind of bind together and join together to create this global open banking framework. If that's the case, well, of course, there'll be massive benefits for businesses, consumers, and regulators, but it's going to massively increase competition between third-party providers, incumbents, and there'll be a rate of innovation like you haven't seen before, where new entrants come into existing country markets that have had nothing to do with that country market beforehand, because open banking at a stroke has made that market much more accessible to that new entrant from another country. So it's going to be really interesting to see to what extent there can be that continuation, or rather even a sort of start between regulators across the world to create that kind of open banking framework. I mean, I'm excited by that, but there are no guarantees. I suppose to end with America, where we started off, America's, you know, a fascinating environment. When it comes to payments and banking infrastructures, it's very unusual, right? On the one hand, it's a market leader for tech innovation, with the Valley and New York as well being two major hubs, the Valley being probably the global hub, even though for fintech, of course, the global hub of innovation and scale is London. Yeah. I think one of the reasons why America hasn't really dominated quite so much in terms of the global fintech stage is because of its very anachronistic payment network and payment system. I mean, more than 60% of consumers still use checks all the time.
I find that amazing.
Very paper-based, check-based system where essentially change is frowned upon. They're very resistant to change and the sort of incumbent ways of working the system. I mean, the banks have that market share because they've got that anachronistic system, and it's difficult at this point for a lot of new entrants to make a huge amount of difference. So we'll see, given I was talking about open banking before, to what extent America is really going to follow that trend as well. There are lots of great noises from Washington and New York about open banking, but it remains to be seen to what extent America really embraces that. I think Canada is probably likely to embrace it far earlier than America, than the United States.
Right. Excellent. Thank you. Before I get on to the last question, Jeremy, I'd love for you to talk about anything important for businesses that you think I might have missed, or anything you wanted to share.
Well, I think there's a sort of neat segue between what's the competitive strategies of currency exchange players in the world and what business needs are, because ultimately what this is all about is providing better, personalized, more effective and cheaper currency exchange capabilities for businesses and consumers. A number of things that I've been talking about, such as open banking, such as new business models for fintech and for currency exchange, and the ability of technology and from a customer-facing perspective to have slick, personalized UX is going to mean that currency exchange is going to become easier and more ubiquitous than it has been to date. I mean, a great example of that is the remittance market. So across the globe, there are 280 million people who are part of that total international migrant population. At this point in time, there's just over 7 million people out of that 280 million who are remitting via digital methods. There's 270 million people across the world who are remitting via cash-based methods and not using online. That's one example where you'll see a massive shift from cash-based to digital means of remitting and people benefiting as a result. Now, clearly, they have to have mobile adoption. They need to be able to have mobiles in their hands, and there needs to be a greater spread of prosperity to be able to benefit from that digital revolution. But you'll see a massive shift from cash-based to digital remittances. That is for absolutely certain. Going back to open banking, well, what we're going to see here is a range of both supply side and demand side partnerships between new third-party providers, existing banks, where customers and businesses are going to get far more tailored products and services, whether it's lending, whether it's savings and investments, whether it's currency exchange itself, in a way that is going to be much more open and accessible to them, because via open banking, these third-party providers will be able to access these customers from existing incumbents' hold of the financial data of their clients and customers. So you're going to see a range of new innovations for both customers and consumers resulting from that. I think the other thing, and I briefly touched upon this as well, is personalization. Ultimately, we're going to get to a point where we're going to see currency exchange providers who become real experts in different use cases, different industries, and different customer and client segments. That's one of the ways in which we're looking to differentiate and lead the competition as well. We're putting a lot of effort at the moment in refining our go-to-market strategy to be a market leader for specific industries, such as wholesale trade, import and export, manufacturing, retail, where there are these global supply chains, where the creation of a bespoke and personalized offering from CurrencyFair can be integrated into their supply chain management process. And those companies reap tremendous cost savings from using CurrencyFair integrated into their processes as well. Another example of that is where businesses have used major cloud accounting packages such as Xero, QuickBooks, ClearBooks, etc. And integrating currency exchange, we are currently integrating with Xero, the market leader in cloud accounting propositions, so that any businesses that are looking to do cross-border payments via Xero benefit from CurrencyFair's exchange rate advantage as well. So it's really about adding value. We're talking about businesses here, adding value to businesses by the ubiquity of the relationship of CurrencyFair to all of their business needs, whether it's an accounting and payments, whether it's supply chain, whether it's providing insight about a specific industry and its use case. There's a very interesting proposition around corporate cards as well. There's been a number of players who have led in that space. There's a very interesting Danish payments company called Pleo, P-L-E-O, who are really leading the way for integrating corporate card spending into a company's ERP or accounting system as well. companies like those have currency exchange needs where their clients using their corporate card across different countries with multiple currencies. So that's one other phenomenon that I wanted to mention. But I think a far bigger phenomenon, and this has been very much something that has dominated the Asian space, is the rise of the super app. By super app, I'm talking about these huge volume, hugely popular, one-stop shop, mobile communications and mobile payments apps. The first one of those was Tencent's WeChat. So WeChat, for those of the listeners who don't know it, is the Chinese equivalent of WhatsApp. And it started life in 2013. And the following year, it introduced a mobile payments capability within WeChat called WeChat Pay. And it was very swiftly followed by Ant Financial's Alipay. So Alipay and WeChat Pay, well, both of those have 1.8 billion customers across China and Southeast Asia. They are enormous. WeChat itself has 1.1 billion customers. Those are two massive mobile messaging apps that have gone into the payment space, and they are ubiquitous for digital payments and for offline payments as well, using your mobile. Alipay is a great example of spreading that capability to, I think, 36 countries across the globe that Alipay customers, of course, principally Chinese, can use Alipay to buy across the globe in those 36 countries. What you're seeing is a kind of a very rapid expansion of the likes of Alipay and WeChat Pay to foreign markets for those Chinese customers and Chinese businesses. It's not just the Chinese super apps as well. There are two other very interesting apps. One in Singapore called Grab, which is originally Singapore's equivalent to Uber. It was a cab hailing app, and it's now sort of branched out into eight different industries, which are accessible just from the app itself. But payments and remittances is one of those capabilities within Grab. And Gojek. Now, Gojek is the Indonesian equivalent of Grab or Uber. It's another cab hailing app. It has six different markets that it offers within its super app. And both of those are, of course, unicorns. Between the two of them, they nearly have 250 million customers across Singapore, Hong Kong, Malaysia, and Indonesia. So whilst it's nothing like that number who are utilizing Gojek and Grab for remittances, a vast majority of those customers using those two apps and WeChat Pay and Alipay are using it for mobile payments within their own countries. So it doesn't take too much of a leap of imagination to suggest that digital remittances will scale very significantly via the use of those four apps across Southeast Asia as well. Whilst that's an amazing and huge phenomenon, I think that the interesting question from that is to what extent we'll see the likes of Alipay, WeChat Pay, Gojek, Grab really dominate in non-Southeast Asian markets. Yes, I've already mentioned how Alipay customers, principally from China, are able to utilize Alipay in 36 other global markets outside of Southeast Asia. But we are not seeing really any take up of those apps within domestic populations outside of Asia. I think one question to ask is, are the likes of Ant Financial, Tencent, Gojek, Grab, are they going to make many more significant acquisitions like Ant Financial did of World First? And are you going to see a real competitive assault on Europe, on North America, Australasia, the UK to dominate in those markets as well? You know, they're market leaders within Asia, of course, but not at all at this point outside of Asia. So I think that's one really interesting question and definitely something I think our listeners will be interested in. But the second thing, without repeating myself, is really the extent of competitive growth in the SME and commercial space. Yes, there are some very significant players. I've mentioned that already, you know, the likes of World First, OFX, Cantox, Ebury, TransferWise, but you've got a lot of the consumer players. And of course, CurrencyFair, its roots have been very much B2C. And even only 2 years ago, 95% of our revenues was coming from B2C, only 5% from B2B. This year, the mix for CurrencyFair is going to be 82% consumer, 18% business. And massive shift. And in 2020, we're anticipating our consumer share to be 63% and our business share to be 37%. So CurrencyFair absolutely sees the need and the value of providing a very competitive and comprehensive offering for SMEs and commercial entities up the food chain, including enterprise-wide companies. And so are our competitors as well. I've mentioned TransferWise a few times. There's a lot of interesting flanking between TransferWise and ourselves, kind of whatever we do first, TransferWise copies. I mean, as indeed, you know, we were the world's first peer-to-peer currency exchange platform and TransferWise copied and pasted 2.5 years later. So there's lots of jockeying between TransferWise and ourselves, and they've got a great SME proposition as well. But, you know, our whole strategy is a real consumer or client benefit, is really developing a very coherent strategy around personalizing around specific customer segments, specific SME types, specific industries, specific use cases. And that really permeates not just on a product level or on a geo coverage and currency level or on a partnerships level, for example, integrating with accounting packages, open banking, etc. But it also is represented in a couple of other ways as well, both in terms of the look and feel of our proposition. So of our open banking, how do you want to best integrate with CurrencyFair, with our content? So we're investing a lot of time, effort, and money into really understanding the businesses within manufacturing, retailing, wholesale, import and export, so that we are real experts in terms of the currency exchange needs of the businesses that operate in those markets. There's a key competitive lever that I've not mentioned yet, which is around pricing. Pricing for a very long time in many different industries has been quite a sophisticated exercise based on different segments, different markets, elasticity pricing. But there hasn't been anything like that same innovation in pricing in the currency exchange market. That's another competitive lever which we believe at CurrencyFair we can truly innovate on. So to think about what are the specific pricing opportunities and, if you like, elasticity pricing between companies from different industries, different sizes, different needs, whether they're in a early adopter stage, whether they're in a real growth and scale stage, or whether they're more of a mature business within their business life cycle, but also what volume of trades are being done as well. So, you know, at higher volumes, can we price at a far significantly lower level than for smaller volumes as well? Those are just 4 or 5 different axes that I've talked about, which can be spliced into a pricing methodology to provide genuinely personalized pricing for different businesses and consumers that come into CurrencyFair. We think we can really lead around pricing in the market as well. I suppose to recap, I think there are 6 real competitive strategies that are at play in the currency exchange space. You could say more widely across the fintech space, but very much to be seen in currency exchange, which we are operating on and possibly providing too much commercial insight to competitors. But it's really about getting your customer segment strategy or client segment strategy right. What is the specific proposition you're looking to develop for specific use cases? I think that can't be underestimated, and that's where we're putting a lot of our time and effort. Of course, the product proposition is another area. You know, I talked about world firsts innovation and having that multi-IBAN account for online sellers. So we're looking to develop exactly the same thing: multi-user authorization, rate lock-in, batch payment and bulk upload, and forward contracts, in addition to having our customer journey completely open API'd so that our customers and clients can use CurrencyFair in the way in which they want to use CurrencyFair. So product is kind of like the second strategy. The third strategy that I've talked about already is really, what's your global footprint? What's your geo coverage? And what are your currency corridors that you offer as well? The fourth key strategy, an absolutely critical strategy, which I've shared with in terms of the rise of open banking and open APIs, is around partnerships. On the supply side, can we ally with people like Ripple or Rapid or BitPayser to expand our geo coverage? Can we integrate with the likes of cloud accounting providers like Xero, Sage, QuickBooks, etc., so that we become ubiquitous, a real one-stop shop for businesses, so that they don't really have to have any great effort in using CurrencyFair because it's integrated into all of their business operations in any case. So partnerships is incredibly important. Pricing, I've mentioned, I think it's kind of one of the most obvious competitive levers, but for some reason, it's not been as sexy or as prominent in the market commentators' conversations. Nobody's really been talking about pricing, but we at CurrencyFair genuinely believe that there's a real competitive edge to be had around pricing. Then lastly is around that sort of personalization and UX. How do we create a proposition at CurrencyFair which demonstrates that we really have an insight about that industry, that we've got the right content, that we show that we can integrate currency exchange into different use cases, that our UX can be personalized using open banking or just the genuine ability of our marketing messages, of our UX, so that we become first point of call for businesses. So personalization is something that cuts across all of tech, not just fintech, but retail tech, all of e-commerce. But it certainly can be applied more in currency exchange as well. Those, I think, are really the six competitive strategies out there. We're trying to play across all six, but certainly leading on the geo coverage, the customer segment, the product and the partnerships and pricing, of course, through that. You'll see a range of innovation. You'll see a lot more tailoring to individual customer types and to businesses. And may the race be won by the best provider.
It looks like it's going to be exciting times ahead. And on that note, as a final one or two questions, I'd love to ask you to put on your astrology hat and give some predictions around the payment space in 2020. And secondly, where can businesses meet you and the team at CurrencyFair, either events or conferences in 2020?
Well, first, I'll answer the second bit. I'd urge everybody to follow CurrencyFair on Twitter and LinkedIn and on Facebook, of course. So, yeah, CurrencyFair, it's all one word, F-A-I-R, you know, we're fair and transparent. It's very much a hallmark of how we do business. And we are very prominent across all social media. I think we need to up our game on Instagram, though. So,
yeah, it's a challenging one.
So 2020 could see CurrencyFair on Instagram as well. But please do follow myself. So on LinkedIn, it is literally just my name. I'm linkedin.com/in/Jeremy Larson. It's just my name. And on Twitter, it's just my name as well, Jeremy Larson. Please feel free to follow me there. In terms of events, you know, we're pretty prominent at all of the major fintech events in the UK and abroad. We're at the Fintech Money Show in Singapore. We're at Fintech Connect. We'll be at Innovate Finance. So please feel free to reach out to me directly. In fact, my email address is jeremylarson@currencyfair.com. Yep. So back to your first question in terms of what are we going to see in the market? I think there's going to be really echoes a little bit in terms of what I've been talking about, those sort of six competitive strategies as well. I think there will be that continuing proliferation of open banking propositions. And by that, I mean currency exchange providers integrating with a number of different business providers, such as cloud accounting providers, being integrated with neobanks and challenger banks. Great examples of those are ourselves with Fidor Bank. TransferWise, over the summer, announced its partnership with Monzo Bank. You'll be seeing more of those classic style integrations between a leading banking fintech, as an example, with the currency exchange provider that provides that sort of seamless FX capability via open banking. So that's definitely going to grow and expand in the UK. And as I was talking about earlier, in terms of developing that global framework, that patchwork of open banking, what I hope we'll see across 2020 is the expansion of these broader API-based propositions to new markets across EMEA region, across Asia. Let me talk about the M bit in the EMEA. The Middle East, I think, is a very fascinating market. Currency Fair have just launched in Abu Dhabi, actually, and Dubai. We're looking to be a major player in the Middle East space. There's a dearth of really compelling payments and currency exchange propositions in the Middle East as well. So I think in terms of a global footprint, you'll see more competitive action there, as well as in Asia, the expansion of correspondent banking networks and digital wallets. That's a neat segue into digital wallets. So I've already talked about Alipay, WeChat Pay, Gojek, and Grab. And I think this is an interesting one. Is there going to be a global expansion of those? I'm not sure that's my third prediction, but it's going to be very interesting to speculate as to whether, probably through some major acquisitions, any of those four companies can increase their market share and dominance in markets outside of Asia as well. So there's more things I could say, but those are three forecasts for next year.
Yeah, that's amazing. Maybe we'll get you back next year and we can talk about those in more detail.
I'd love to. Maybe a specific session just on future gazing.
Absolutely. Awesome. Well, thank you, Jeremy. You've been an amazing guest, and I'm sure there's a lot there to digest for the business people listening to this episode. So I really appreciate that. And wish you have a great Christmas and New Year, and look forward to speaking to you in 2020.
Well, thank you very much, Satwant. It's been a pleasure speaking to the Payment Show and to yourself. Very interested to hear what feedback you get from your listeners and from customers and businesses who might be interested in what I've got to say. And yes, I'd very much like to come back on the Payment Show for part two. And I wish you a very relaxing Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and we'll speak in 2020.
Thank you. Really appreciate that. Take it easy.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the Payments Show on your favorite podcast app. If you would like to accept payments faster in your company, please head over to digitalmoneylab.com, where you can find more information. Thanks for listening, and see you in the next episode.